What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to the NBA Outlet. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron and two special guests today, Victor Savatel and Jack Manuel, regular on the show. What's up, fellas? How we doing?
Doing good. Hanging in. How you doing?
I'm in a rival podcast. This is going to get spicy.
for the crowd, we got a whole gang for this podcast. New York Knicks have some excitement and no Brooklyn Buzz bias, okay?
I don't know what you're talking about. But like Corey mentioned, we are talking New York Knicks today, doing that season preview. As always, you can find the show on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. Also head to Designtree/OffTheGlass. Use discount code OTG5. Save yourself $5. But before we talk about the Knicks for next season, we got to talk about them from last season. Obviously, worst team in the Eastern Conference. How would you summarize last season in one emoji?
So for me, obviously, it's a rebuilding year, a lot of ups and downs. For me, the obvious choice was a sigh emoji, which is usually the case with the year one of a rebuild. First year coach really just trying to establish the culture. Young players just trying to figure out what their roles are, establishing their identity in the league. So I'm definitely going with the sigh emoji.
Yeah, I vibe with that. I remember, I can't remember if it was last season or the season before in the Brooklyn Buzz when you're talking about the Knicks and Nets rivalry. I was deciding between which apple represents which borough and which team. And I ended up going with the green apple for the Knicks because green apples suck more, you know. I'm a pink lady dude, so give me those red apples. I'm all about the Brooklyn Nets red apples. And the green apples are the Granny Smiths, the New York Knicks. So green apples suck, but if we're talking about the green apple, it's got to be some sort of rotten version. You know, maybe iOS 13 has some rotten apples because it wasn't the best city, best season for this team in the Big Apple.
I have the think and thanks emoji. Obviously, it was a down year for the Knicks, but we did see, as you guys mentioned, the start of what I think is a positive rebuild. I think there are some nice young core pieces on this team. So for me, it's the thinking face emoji, in which maybe the Knicks are actually doing this the right way.
Yeah, I went with the thumbs down emoji here. Obviously, a bad season, one of the worst in franchise history. But what's the biggest positive takeaway last year for New York?
So it has to be the emergence of the young core. Mitchell Robinson, second-round pick, came out of nowhere. I don't think anybody expected him to have the season that he did, particularly defensively. In about 20 minutes of play, he was able to get himself a second in the league in blocks. Still really young, still really raw, but a lot of possibilities there. Then they got Dennis Smith Jr. in the trade for Kristaps Porzingis. Really athletic. I think a lot of people are down on him because he's coming from that Hoop Mixtape Ball Is Life era. You kind of watch him grow up through the years, and people might have had these unreal expectations for him coming into the league. But he definitely seems like he's on his way to being a force. Kevin Knox, Alonzo Trier, Scott Perry deserves a lot of recognition for what he was able to do last year.
Yeah, I think I'll probably piggyback off of what Vic was saying. I'm going with Mitchell Robinson. I thought he was tremendous and could be a top center in this league sooner rather than later. His defensive capabilities are outstanding. I'm sure he'll be working on his offensive skill set in the offseason, but Mitchell Robinson was tremendous, and he could certainly be, after his rookie season, you know, very close to be one of the best defensive centers in the league sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I'm going with the young core as well. I think the young core is what the biggest positive should be. And if you're the Knicks, you should be happy that this is the best takeaway for the last season. Mitchell Robinson, as you guys mentioned, really stepped out as a defensive force for this team. Alonzo Trier had some nice positive moments as a scoring option. And then Kevin Knox, although he was really bad the second half of the year, the first half there was potential there. You see these guys hit walls early on. What can he develop? But he looks like he can be a nice stretch four for them, or a three crazy wingspan. I think I like him as a versatile, a 3-and-D guy. And then Dennis Smith Jr., you know, obviously they didn't get to see him in a large sample size. There's still a lot of potential there, a lot of athleticism. What does he become as the true point guard playmaker for this team going forward? But there's definitely some nice pieces in place as of right now.
Yeah, for me, I think you just have to go with Mitchell Robinson here. Just the potential you saw as a shot blocker last season, you know, like Jack and Vic mentioned, you, Corey, as well, that he has this defensive player of the year type potential. Obviously, he might not be there next season, but down the line, with that athleticism and the ability to move at that size was really impressive. And I think if there's one guy in the Knicks roster in terms of a young talent that you feel confident is going to be a good player in the NBA, you would go with Mitchell Robinson. But what would be the biggest negative takeaway from last season?
Losing aside, because I understand that losing is very much a part of this process in the first year of a rebuild, I have to say the Porzingis trade just took my breath away. You might have heard murmurs during the summer that things weren't right between the franchise and the star, but to have them traded the way they did in midseason, just really overwhelming, because I think for most Knicks fans, we saw him as being that piece that was going to get us across the finish line and make us a perennial power. So just have him traded away like that really took the air for me.
Yeah, I think that's probably the main one as well. But, you know, I think if we're including free agency and the draft in there, I'll probably go with that one just as a differing sort of point because, you know, didn't get the number one picks, didn't get Zion, didn't get Kyrie, didn't get KD. You know, I'm not going to say where they went to, Brooklyn. But I think that losing Porzingis was almost the starting point to that. You know, if you keep your franchise superstar or your budding franchise superstar, he's not necessarily there yet. I think there's a higher likelihood that Kevin Durant might be a little bit more interested. DeAndre might want to stay, which could lure Kyrie as well. So I think that losing Porzingis was almost the starting point to where things sort of, the negatives continue to occur in free agency. And, you know, James Dolan not shutting his mouth is probably another one.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest takeaway, you guys hit it on the head. It's the fact that this team lost games, and the Porzingis trade you can pinpoint. Obviously, with how Dennis Smith Jr. has looked post-trade, it didn't look great to start. Porzingis, obviously, we don't know what Porzingis is. We all assume he's going to come back just as good as normal, continue to excel as a power forward in this league for the Dallas Mavericks. But that trade in particular, you can take away as a negative because it probably did hurt their chances in the long haul of getting a Kevin Durant and or Kyrie Irving.
And, you know, essentially he was your safety net because if you didn't get KD or Kyrie, you still had this guy that we've mentioned being a potential star. I know when he was healthy in that last season, he was a, you know, dark horse MVP candidate. Having the Knicks around 500 with not really a lot of talent on that roster. So obviously that hurts. But I think the way they handled the whole Frank Ntilikina situation, not getting a real chance to play last year, and then we just saw him really ball out in the FIBA tournament. So I think the whole situation with Frank hasn't been great, and there was a lot of talk about trading him. So maybe they can get that relationship back. But moving on to the ranking, what do you guys think about the Knicks being ranked number 28 in the OTG Power Rankings?
Sounds fair. Sounds accurate. It's a young team with unproven commodities. Fizdale's really going to earn his check this year. If they find a way to have success, which they possibly might with all the young players they have, it's going to have a lot to do with Fizdale's X's and O's. He comes from that Spoelstra, Pat Riley school of thought. So when I think about the team, at least in this year's iteration, I'm comfortable saying that I think they're going to be well-conditioned. I think they're going to show some defensive aptitude, and I think that they're not going to turn the balls over as much. They're not going to beat themselves.
Yeah, they're going to be better than last season. And I think this 28th ranking, I think everywhere from about 25 to 30, there's a lot of teams that could, you know, exceed that, be at the higher end of the mid-20s or the low end. And I think that the Knicks have enough guys on the roster that are capable NBA players. Yes, all of them are power forwards and centers. But if David Fizdale can work his coaching sort of mastery, as sort of Vic was alluding to, then, you know, they could also trade some of these guys for other assets mid-season as well. I think that they might be better than this 28 ranking. I think I'd have them maybe one spot or two spots higher because I know in the Phoenix Suns pod, hearing you guys speak about it, I think the Knicks have some real potential to be better than them, despite the fact that there is more talent, individual young talent on the Suns. I just think that there is a cohesion and I think chemistry that I think could build. And there's a bit of a sort of monkey on the back and sort of some naysayers that I think the Knicks are going to want to prove something.
Yeah, I think this ranking is fair. We could see them go a couple spots higher, I think, this season. But this is, you know, they're a bottom five team as of right now still.
Yeah, I definitely would have them probably closer to 25 than 30. I think, like Jack mentioned, there's still a lot of veterans on this roster that'll kind of help them win games. Maybe by the end of the season, they'll be back at 28 because they trade away some of those guys around the deadline. But I could easily see them up a couple spots. And I definitely don't think they'll drop any lower than the Cavs and Hornets at this point, unless there were some crazy moves or injuries.
They want to finish the season at this ranking. If you have these vets and you want, and the idea is to trade off these guys, which I assume it is, then you would want to be, I think, right around this range, ideally, if you're looking for the rebuild.
It's a tough decision because I think when you look in a rebuild, that sometimes it's like easy to be like, all right, we want to be completely terrible. But you could also look at the Knicks situation. They might feel comfortable with the amount of young talent they have moving forward, and they'd rather see progress in terms of maybe being in the mid-20s in wins than having another tanking season. Because if you look at the roster, there's a lot of high-end first-round picks. They just have to develop these guys.
Right.
I think it's worth asking, you know, we have a fan on the pod, but it's worth asking Vic, what would you prefer? Would you prefer Corey's sort of outcome in that you finish in the lower ranks, get a higher likelihood of getting that pick, though again, after this year's draft, it doesn't necessarily guarantee you a top three pick, even though the Knicks, you know, did get the third pick. They didn't get the second or the first. Or would you rather be semi-competent, like Nick was sort of saying, get around that 30-win mark, or would you prefer to have that 22, early sort of 20s win mark and get a better chance, at least, of getting that number one pick?
I think a lot about, in terms of this season, I think it's going to be a lot about modeling and just finding ways to get better every day. So for me, that means getting a lot of reps for the kids. And usually when you get these kids the reps, that means it's going to come with a lot of losses. But I think they need to get the experience. When I think about Kevin Knox, when I think about DSJ, Dennis Smith Jr., they're all really, really young. Even Frank, still really, really young, even though he's going on his third year in the league. So I want to make sure they get their reps, and it's usually going to come at the expense of winning. So for me, I wouldn't be so upset if they ended up getting 20 wins and they're working towards another lottery pick. But if we find our way having success, if Fizdale is able to etch out some close wins and you start getting some momentum, that works too.
I would say just another point to consider for the Knicks is a one thing that they need to do as an organization is try to change that perspective of the culture and the ways in New York. And I think even if they play the kids and they don't win a ton of games, as long as they're playing a more competitive style of basketball, you know, similar to what we saw with the Nets in the past in their rebuild, then the Knicks want to take another step forward, regardless of what it is in terms of the win total. But the culture and the actual on-court play needs to be better. Now, talking young talent, RJ Barrett, obviously top pick. Ignas Brazdakis, you could correct me on that, Vic, because I know you're a big fan of his.
Iggy Brazdakis, Michigan, yeah.
Tell me about these two. What do you love about them, and were you happy with these picks?
Well, RJ Barrett is much ballyhooed, Maple Mamba, out of the box, no assembly required type scorer. His father, Rowan, used to play for St. John's, so he's also the GM of the Canadian national basketball team, which works. I feel like he has a certain level of polish on and off the court that's going to help him in New York. I think the NBA spacing is going to help him. If you watched him in summer league, the jump shot wasn't what it was at Duke. He's been fairly inconsistent with the shot. But for me, I think the biggest takeaway is what you see from him defensively. And I think how versatile of a piece he's going to be for Fizdale. And he also possesses some playmaking ability. Ignas Brazdakis from Michigan. I'm not sure how much time he's going to see this year. He's one of the better players on a Michigan team that made it to the Sweet 16. Lefty, able to get to the basket, nice little frame, tough, can shoot a little bit. Looks like he's going to be a G League player, but it looks like he might end up finding his way onto the roster.
Yeah, I like RJ Barrett. I think that we probably forget that heading into last year's college season, he was projected to be the number one pick ahead of Zion, and then Zion just did Zion things that no one else can really do. You know, you describe him as an adjective because he's not an entity. But RJ Barrett, you know, I think the desire that he shows to be in New York as well is something that I'm really excited to see. You know, when he went out into MSG and the announcers were sort of talking about him and stuff, you know, you could see the true emotion on his face. I think he is going to thrive in New York, and I think it's going to be important that David Fizdale makes him a real focal point and lets the young guys grow, as Vic was alluding to as well. You know, he needs to work on a few things. You know, I think that he has some real strengths, but he also has some real weaknesses and how he can bridge those gaps. You know, I think the three ball needs to be a little bit more consistent. I think he needs to be, you know, stop taking those mid-range. I think he needs to have a little bit more polish and craft. But again, he's a rookie, and hopefully he's given all those chances to grow. I'm just intrigued to see the sort of fit alongside a lot of these other young guys like DSJ, like Kevin Knox, and who is given the allotted time, who is becoming the sort of got the focal point of the offense, and who sort of David Fizdale aligns a sort of offense and on-court identity with. I think RJ Barrett is the way to go, at least at this early point.
I'm a big fan of RJ Barrett. I've been on the Barrett bandwagon from the start. I actually still think that over the long-term careers that Barrett will have a more successful career than Zion Williamson. And my takes tend to end pretty bad on this preview series.
Especially when referring to rookies. So.
Yeah, especially when it's about rookies.
Trae Young.
Trae Young in an instance. I like Barrett. I think there's a lot of offensive versatility there. The jump shot is consistent, but we kind of see that. The fact that he's a relentless scorer, a guy who can get his own offense, looks to get his own offense. And actually, I thought after watching some summer league, which you take with a grain of salt, there's some underrated playmaking ability there as well. He's a decent defender. I just think also the fact that this kid doesn't look scared to be in New York City. Obviously, there are some players, some guys who, when they're in these big markets underneath the lights, they can seem to take a step back. It can be too much for them. So far, I think RJ Barrett has handled the noise, the buzz very well. Obviously, when you get into the regular season and you start going progressing through the year, that may change. But I think he's the right kind of guy to take on the Big Apple. And I have a really good feeling about him going forward.
Yeah, and I think that's really important when you play in such a big market like New York City. You know, there's not many places like playing like New York City for the New York Knicks with a media presence. And the fact that RJ Barrett is kind of really into that and he enjoys that media presence should really help him as he develops. Obviously, this is going to be a big season for his development. I'm sure he'll have his growing pains, but by the end of the year, I think he'll be a better player. But moving on to the offseason, they obviously didn't sign the big names like Kyrie, KD, or Kawhi, but they did sign Julius Randle, Bobby Portis, Marcus Morris, Reggie Bullock, Wayne Ellington, Elfrid Payton, and Taj Gibson. What do you like about these guys? Who was your favorite signing?
Obviously, I think the most important signing right now is Julius Randle. He's going to fill a need in the front court. Seeing the improvements he made over the last couple of years, the way he's taking care of his body, he's going to be a productive player for the Knicks. But the one I'm looking forward to the most is Bobby Portis, crazy eyes, especially when you look at the gaps they have in terms of the back front court and who's going to be the one backing up Mitchell Robinson. Bobby Portis' ability to defend, to rebound, to stretch the floor. I think all of those things could come into play. And if the Knicks start finding ways to win, I think you're going to be able to tack up a big part of that to what Bobby Portis is able to bring off of the bench.
Yeah, I'm interested to sort of see how they sort of, you know, I think it's probably the number one, the biggest question heading into the New York Knicks 2019-20 season, how they manage the minutes between Portis, Randle, Gibson, all those sort of big guys, Marcus Morris as well, who's a four. But, you know, the best signing was Julius Randle. You know, a nice deal as well, not too lengthy, only 3 years. And all the other guys, you know, I know Nick has made this point clear, and I agree with it, the fact that, yes, it's not the best matching roster, but these guys are all on manageable deals, one-year deals, and they are tradable assets. I like Wayne Ellington as well, as his ability to stretch the floor is certainly known. And Reggie Bullock is a really good utility as well. So there's some guys here outside of those names in terms of all the power forwards slash centers that I think will add value. Elfrid Payton's worth a flyer as well, as long as he doesn't interfere and you know his role, what is wanted out of him in relation to, is he starting, is he backing up, or is he going to earn the minutes in relation to Dennis Smith Jr. I'm really intrigued to see how that works as well. Not the worst offseason, but not the best either.
Yeah, you know, Julius Randle, I think, is a guy who has a lot of potential still. You know, coming off the leg injury, his rookie year with the Lakers, he had a delayed start, but he's gotten better and better each year. Yes, there are some issues on the defensive side of the ball, but with the league going small, he is not the worst guy you can have as a small ball five. A really hustle rebounder, a guy who plays above his height in that regard, a guy who's expanded his offensive game. He started to knock down the three-point shot a little bit. So what does he progress to in another year? Obviously, this offseason, we've seen Julius Randle in the gym, looks big as hell, and arguably the best shape of his career. So what does that look like? And then we mentioned the other guys. I mean, very good contracts, you know, a bunch of short-term deals, with the idea in mind of we missed out on the big free agents. We're garner up as many role players as we can, and come deadline, a lot of these teams that are contending for, you know, the playoffs or a championship will come knocking at our doors and we'll get some assets. So I think it was a really good offseason for the New York Knicks as a plan B to not giving Durant. Even though I know initially James Dolan and the organization reported that this was the goal all along, it was not. but I think with that said, it was still a successful offseason if you do trade these guys. If you don't trade any of these guys and you end up keeping the majority of them, then I think it is a loss. But you have to assume that at least half of these guys get traded.
And I think, well, even if they don't trade them, the only other positive, too, is they're not, you know, stuck with these large contracts. In the past, they probably would have signed these veterans to 3 or 4 year deals. At least they can get this money off and maybe they can help them kind of turn the culture around and set a good influence for some of the younger guys if they can't trade them. But ideally, you'd at least like to gather a couple picks, even if it's second round picks. You saw what Mitchell Robinson turned into, so maybe they could get lucky again. But I think Julius Randle is the one guy that they signed that is young, has talent and the potential to get better and could be a nice pairing with Mitchell Robinson. Because obviously Robinson is going to take care of the paint protection and the defensive abilities. But overall, I don't think it's a terrible offseason because they were able to rebound from not getting the big stars like you guys all mentioned. But talking departures, we got Kateem Allen, Mario Hezonja, Noah Vonleh, Luke Kornet, Emmanuel Mudiay, DeAndre Jordan, Lance Thomas. Out of these guys, who do you wish they were able to retain?
I wouldn't say I wanted to see Emmanuel Mudiay stay, but watching the progress of Mudiay and Noah Vonleh really gave me some faith in terms of watching Fizdale and what he can do with young players, able to help them reach their potential. Mudiay, and I would say Vonleh to a big extent, were like fringe players. I think people were really down on them, though they're particularly young. They didn't have the success early on that people thought they might have had. So to see Fizdale coach them up, it's kind of sad to see them go.
Yeah, for me, it's Noah Vonleh, head and shoulders above everything else. And the fact that, you know, they picked up five other power forwards anyway, I like Noah Vonleh because he's young, he's got defensive acumen, and he showed a lot, like Vic was sort of saying. And the fact that, you know, Minnesota got him on the cheap as well just shows that where the priorities laid for, and it's odd because why would you give these sort of inflated contracts to I would prefer, you know, I'm just saying this from a personal subjective standpoint, I'd prefer to have Noah Vonleh on a decent manageable deal than to give some big ish money to a guy like Bobby Portis. Even though those are tradable assets and yes, it's not the worst thing in the world, I just like it because Noah Vonleh is a better role player, whereas Bobby Portis is going to want those extra minutes. You know, Marcus Morris is going to want those extra minutes, where I think you know what you're getting out of Vonleh. And I think that there's value in consistency as well. You know, coming back, he knows the system. You know, he's played under Fizdale as well. But what the Knicks lost is Minnesota's gain.
You definitely miss Noah Vonleh. So I think Vonleh is a guy who just does like the Ed Davis role for teams. Goes in there, is an above average rebounder, really fights for boards, has extended his range a little bit. Vonleh is a great glue guy, just a great role player to have. Emmanuel Mudiay, he's been, he was really good for them. And I think if you're signing up for Peyton, the Emmanuel Mudiay situation to me is, you could have gone with either guy, I would have been okay with it. I think they relatively gave you the same thing. Maybe you get more defense from Alfred Payton. And you might miss Lance Thomas from a simple locker room standpoint. But again, none of these guys are do or die.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think any of them were do or die. Some of them were project players. They saw them for a year, and I guess they didn't see enough where they really wanted to retain them, because I think they would have been able to keep Vonleh or Mudiay or even Hezonja if they really liked their game. It could have been also the guys wanting to leave as well and going to a winning situation. But talking more about next season, what would be the biggest X factor that's not player-specific or health?
So I'm going to go with the Knicks front office, Scott Mills, Steve Perry. I'm going to throw Fizdale in, and last but not least, James Dolan. The Knicks have to go about changing the perception of the team around the league and how the organization is run, and it was no more apparent than what we saw this offseason. I think you saw it with blue blood teams like the Lakers and the Knicks. They can no longer rely on their name. They can no longer rely on the markets. Marquee players are looking at organizations that have coaches that are keen on player development, have consistency, a track record of success. So it's really going to be about what Fizdale can do on the court in terms of cultivating identity with these young players, creating some stability, and then how the front office is able to change the perception of the team around the league if the Knicks really want to take that next step going forward.
Yeah, I think it's David Fizdale, head and shoulders above. And I think overall, if we're looking at, you know, what's more important, players, if you're even talking about players, outside of RJ Barrett, I think David Fizdale is the most important New York Knicks figure. I think that, you know, the nice little tidbit there on James Dolan, you know, in the New York Knicks Hire or Fire series for OTGBasketball.com, he was a pretty easy sort of mark for an easy decision, an easy sort of person to pick. And that sort of, so I think that, if you're talking about negative X factors, it's obviously James Dolan, and hopefully, you know, he just learns to not get on the microphone and you know, maybe be more competent in the way that he is with the Rangers team, from what I've heard. It's weird how he can be so bad with one team and so, you know, decent with another. But I think Fizdale is incredibly important because, like Vic was alluding to, how does he establish their identity? How does he develop these young players? How does he keep, you know, harmony within the locker room? He has a track record, you know, players love him. But this is a completely new situation with a completely new roster. And, you know, heading into preseason, you know, I think Fizdale is an incredibly important figure for the Knicks in terms of what they want to achieve going forward. And this is, I guess, the first step in their process.
Front office are two Front office is a perfect way to go with this route. I just went with player development, and obviously that stems from David Fizdale. But player development is what this team has pivoted on, right? It's we missed out on the stars. We didn't go chasing stars or second-tier stars in free agency. We went after veteran role players, and we have these young guys. So for me, it's player progression. Does Kevin Knox take a step forward? Does Mitchell Robinson elevate to Miles Turner, Rudy Gobert levels of defensive excellence around the rim? Does Dennis Smith Jr. become the point guard of the future for this New York Knicks team? Does RJ Barrett look like he's a centerpiece? So for me, it's player development.
Yeah, you guys are spot on. Obviously, player development is huge. And then also the front office, not only for setting the culture, but making the right moves at the deadline and trying to get value for some of these guys that you're not going to keep long term, even if it's just grabbing a second round pick. And then also making sure you're not necessarily taking back bad money that's going to screw you moving forward. But who's going to be the starting lineup on opening night?
I think Fizdale goes with the young guys. So I see Mitchell Robinson starting at the 5, Julius Randle at the 4. Kevin Knox at the 3, RJ Barrett at the 2, and Dennis Smith Jr. at the 1.
Yeah, it's interesting because Hoops Hype has Elfrid Payton for some reason starting at the 1, which is ludicrous to me. I would have a minor change to what Vic had. I'd have Dennis Smith, I'd have RJ Barrett, but I would have Marcus Morris at the 3 instead, and Julius Randle at the 4 with Mitchell Robinson at the 5.
The starting 5 is tricky. I would have Mitchell Robinson as a lock at the center. I would have Dennis Smith Jr. and RJ Barrett as locks at the guard position. And then for small forward, I would go with Kevin Knox. But I wouldn't be surprised, Jack, if they did go the route of having a veteran in this starting lineup. In on Marcus Morris, he's a little bit tough and gritty. And I think Julius Randle starts at the 4, although I think we won't see a lot of Robinson and Julius Randle on the floor. I don't think that's a good idea.
I have a similar lineup. I think you guys are right in the sense that Dennis Smith Jr., RJ Barrett, Julius Randle, and Mitchell Robinson are all locks. I think they could go the Marcus Morris route, but it also wouldn't completely surprise me if they went the Wayne Ellington route, because a lineup of Dennis Smith Jr., RJ Barrett, Julius Randle, and Mitchell Robinson has really bad spacing. And obviously we know how crucial spacing is in the NBA nowadays, and you want to have an opportunity for these guys to operate, and if they don't have the space, they can't do it.
Or even Reggie Bullock as well. He can provide some spacing too.
I think he's not going to be ready for opening night from what I understand. I think he's still recovering from a neck injury.
Gotcha.
But I think I could see Morris as well, because at least he's a competent three-point shooter too. He shot some nice percentages.
I think for Fizdale, I think he recognizes even in year 2 how important this is going to be for the young guys to get those reps. So I think from a practical standpoint, I understand why there might be some concerns in terms of spacing, in terms of confidence. If you're having the young guys out there early and they start losing and they're not having the basketball isn't looking competitive. But I think by the end of this season, if you're not seeing those games from Kevin Knox, if you're not seeing those games from Mitchell Robinson, I think as much as you want to talk about gains and being productive, if he just stood where he was at defensively and did these bits and pieces offensively, he's going to be fine. But the team is going to be looking at Fizdale, and they're going to be looking at these young players, particularly the young core, to make sure they're making their gains. And that's how they're really going to – I think the team is going to be judged this season.
I'll ask you guys a question. I mean, I'm a big believer in that having veterans around for young guys kind of helps them develop faster and allows them to kind of play better on the court, kind of speeding up their progress. Do you guys think it's better to go all in and just play the young guys, or to have some vets mixed in to kind of get them to the competent NBA level?
Well, if we're going down the route of, you know, what we've sort of seen, Nick, you know, we saw how much value the veterans provided, sprinkled upon, you know, even 2017-18 and obviously in 2018-19. You know, I think that there is value in having them, but at the same time, you know, Victor alluded to it earlier that the emphasis has to be on the growth of Dennis Smith Jr., the growth of RJ Barrett, and the growth of Mitchell Robinson. And I think you can still, you know, provide them growth even if they're not playing 20-25 minutes a night. I think Taj Gibson is a really sort of good figure that can really help Mitchell Robinson grow and just know what it's like to be as a vet in the league and know how to do the right things and develop the right habits. And I think that with the same with Julius Randle, you know, I think that there are a lot of guys, and I think that it's a certain balancing act. I would prefer, you know, if I'm a New York Knicks fan, just to see my priority would be, rather than the wins and loss total, would be, you know, is Dennis Smith Jr. A capable and starting point guard? If we see 70 games out of him and we see, you know, him getting the minutes that he deserves, then we know. I want to see, you know, a high usage rate for RJ Barrett, you know, not giving all these possessions to Julius Randle and Bobby Portis and such. I think that at the same time, because, you know, David Fizdale, like I said, he's going to have the hardest time in terms of everyone wants to get their touches. Everyone wants these guys. You know, Bobby Portis loves to have the ball in his hands. Julius Randle loves to have the ball in his hands. These guys work best with it in their hands, and RJ Barrett does more than any other. But then, does that take away from the development of Dennis Smith Jr.? I think it's just this never-ending circle where you just get in this tangent where it's just like, well, if you do this, then you're sacrificing this. So I prefer the priority to be on the young guys, but it doesn't mean you have to completely eliminate the veteran presence.
Yeah, I mean, I think veterans are important to any roster. Obviously, with this situation with the Knicks, it's tricky because there's so many veterans that you expect the veterans to get minutes, and then the veterans are taking minutes, you fear they take away from the young guys. But in most situations that you're rebuilding, you want to have key veterans to help push along the young guys, to be a mentor for the locker room. So that is the ideal situation. Like the Brooklyn Nets, you guys know, I mean, Jared Dudley, for example, nothing flashy, but a veteran that can help push along a locker room. Damari Carroll, another guy who sticks out in my mind. So veteran presence is definitely important to young locker rooms.
It'll be interesting. I think it's all about balance.
Yeah, Taj Gibson is going to be wonderful for Mitchell Robinson. I think you saw when they just a little bit of DeAndre Jordan and Mitchell Robinson, how he was able to get better. I'm hoping that Wayne Ellington is going to be a positive for the team. This the thing that always just sticks out in my mind when I think about this is that Fizdale is on a contract. Coaches tend to come and go. And as much as outsiders, as fans, we might be thinking that we're looking at it from this long-term process, Fizdale is very much thinking about keeping his job next season. And okay, I don't think he will want to put himself – he's, you know, I think all coaches obviously have this concern that I might be grooming these players for the next regime. So I think he's going to find ways to make sure the young players are, you know, flashing now. Even with the vets around, I think the onus is going to be on the young guys.
Definitely an interesting situation. But talking about players, who's the player to watch for the Knicks next year?
I think it's Mitchell Robinson. I think he's going to be in contention for MIP, Most Improved Player. I wouldn't be surprised if you saw him to be an all-defensive team candidate. Newsflash for some people who haven't watched him play recently, he can hit from out for 15 feet. As long as we start seeing some more consistency on the boards, which I think we're going to see with him becoming bigger and stronger, using this offseason to work on his body, to filling out a little bit more, he should be able to do wonderful things. As long as he's healthy, he should be fine.
Yeah, I'm going with Dennis Smith Jr. I think it's going to be – it's a make or break season for him, obviously. Obviously, you know, he's had his time in Dallas. He's now heading into another season with the New York Knicks after being traded there. You know, does the three-point shot work? Is he capable enough as a ball handler? Can he just shoot the ball? Because his field goal percentages have been very poor. Is he an effective scorer? Does he just know how to be a point guard and be an effective point guard in the league? You know, he's not a good free throw shooter either. You know, with the Knicks, he shot, you know, 57% from the free throw line, which is putrid. You know, in his rookie season and in Dallas, he shot nearly 70%, which is okay. You know, it's essentially the same as Caris LeVert. Both of those guys really need to improve there. And the one thing that I am worried about is that I saw some video and an article going around on Twitter that Dennis Smith Jr. has changed his free throw shooting form to be Markelle Fultz-like, where he's got that little hitch in it, and it looks bad. So, I mean, I think that it's worrisome. Hopefully, he's just working on different things of what he can become confident with. But it's a make-or-break season for Dennis Smith Jr.
So, I'm nice. I like that we all went with a different guy so far. I'm going with RJ Barrett. I'm riding with the rookie. Obviously, I think there's a lot of guys to watch. And there is no wrong answer, realistically, you're picking one of these young guys. Even if you pick a vet because you're hoping trade value goes up. I'm going with RJ Barrett, the rookie. I think there's a slight chance he wins Rookie of the Year. I think Ja Morant might win Rookie of the Year. I'm just not big on Zion, and that's going to bite me in the ass, and I'm well aware of it. I'm ready for it. Bring it the hell on. But I think RJ Barrett's a guy to watch. I mean, coming in, how does he handle the pressure? How does he handle the buzz of New York City? When he goes through, you know, a little drought, what does that do to his confidence? Can he muster up some big-time rookie performances? How does he handle playing with these new guys around him? Does he develop a more consistent three-point shot? Do we worry about him defensively? So for me, it's RJ Barrett.
You know, I was going to go with Mitchell Robinson, but I'll just be a little different. I'll go with Kevin Knox because, you know, Corey hinted at this earlier, really bad second half of the season. Can he show us he's living up to the hype of being a lottery pick? Is he becoming closer to an NBA player? How's he doing in terms of a physical development, adding more size? And obviously the shooting needs to improve. So I think, you know, Corey hinted at this. You could pick pretty much anybody in the young core, and you could even pick the veterans just based off of this team. There's just so many guys to watch and see how the season kind of projects. But talking about the team as a whole, what's the worst case scenario for next year?
The young core regresses. Dennis Smith Jr., Mitchell Robinson, Kevin Knox, they just don't take those gains, those leaps and bounds that we think that they should. RJ Barrett, we saw those shooting struggles in summer league. If this is something that continues to, you know, something that plagues him going forward, it's going to be an issue. And in New York, in a draft that had Ja Morant and Zion Williamson, fans are going to be, he's obviously going to be compared to those two. Fans can be cruel. So if the young core doesn't make those gains, I think fans are going to be a little disappointed.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a topsy-turvy roller coaster season for the New York Knicks, whichever way you sort of think about it. I think that there could be unrest within the locker room, within chemistry and such, guys who are unhappy with, you know, their role within the team. And I think, yeah, the number one thing, it's an easy sort of pick, but it is. It's the lack of growth of the young players. Dennis Smith Jr. doesn't solidify himself and doesn't show any growth. Mitchell Robinson maybe takes a step back or doesn't show any growth as an offensive player or as a rebounder. So I think that is probably the worst case more than anything because, you know, you can always trade these older guys, but, you know, you're invested in, you made the trade with Porzingis and, you know, Dennis Smith Jr. and the array of picks was the crux of that. And if Dennis Smith Jr. turns into nothing, it's almost like, yes, Porzingis wanted to go and obviously, you know, they traded him because, you know, he was going to be toxic sort of locker room presence anyway. But, you know, Dennis Smith Jr. as being the crux of the package as in terms of the player, if there is no improvement from him, then it's almost fatalistic.
Yeah. Worst case scenario, I think, is the young core obviously takes a step backwards and the Knicks are just bad. They don't win a lot of games. You see the young core regress. And then also maybe you can't get rid of as many of these veterans as you want to. So just the entire organization taking a step back as a whole.
Yeah, I think the perspective not being good of the team and kind of some bad locker room vibes, and then really the biggest thing would be the young guys not taking a step forward. But what would be the best case scenario?
Fizdale finds a way to coach them to the playoffs, which I know I'm being cautiously optimistic, and I think even that's a stretch, saying playoffs. But they're finding ways to be competitive. I mean, I've been able to watch the Nets from afar, and I've always admired Kenny Atkinson these last two seasons prior to getting Kyrie and Kevin. Because if you've been watching them every night, it's a beautiful brand of basketball. You're seeing the energy. You're seeing the effort. Over the past two or three seasons, you've seen them cultivate this identity of a team that seems to be pretty deep. Guys that could come in, fill a role. So for me, if you see Kevin Knox, if he's able to grow, he's still incredibly, incredibly young. Yeah. And it's almost it's a shame that at his position and at his size, he's only in his second year. We've already kind of written him off. He might end up finding a way to be a really productive player on both sides of the ball. So if you can see some of these young players make these major leaps, it might be Dennis Smith Jr., it might not. It might be Kevin Knox, it might not. But if the young players are able to take bits and pieces and work towards wins, I think that's a successful season.
Before I get to my best case, Vic, I'm intrigued to hear, in terms of the players that we're sort of talking about with this young sort of nucleus, who do you think is the most likely to solidify themselves as, you know, a long-term NBA starter, possible all-star, all-NBA defense player, whatever you want to call it, and who has the highest likelihood of being a bust, being like Kevin Knox or whoever it might be, sort of both scenarios looking at it?
I think Mitchell Robinson seems to be a given, at least in my humble opinion. Everything I've seen from him and the limited sample time, it speaks volumes in terms of his productivity. So I think he's going to be somebody who's going to really etch a role for him in the NBA. Dennis Smith Jr., I enjoy watching him. High flyer, a really entertaining. But in terms of the basketball and playing winning basketball, ton of questions. But what is that? When you look at his skill set and his physicality, you would think that he would find a way to be successful in this new NBA that seems to be so guard-oriented. But I wouldn't be surprised if this season, halfway through, they decide moving away from him.
I think the biggest bust opportunity when it comes to this group of core is Dennis Smith Jr. You know, there's been a get up in his free throw shot and his jump shot. I know a video just came out and it looked like he still has that hitch. That's a little bit of a concern. Obviously, when that video was recorded, I don't think it was confirmed. You know, can he develop a consistent jump shot? Is he just a flashy dunker? Is there playmaking ability there above the league norm for, or the above the, below league norm that he does to this point in time? So I think he has the biggest bust opportunity. And I think if you're looking for a guy to really boom, then it's Mitchell Robinson. Obviously, we only got a small sample size of him last year. And, you know, they were it was really good defensively. Offensively, you're not expecting too much. But this is a center who defensively can be the anchor for your defense.
And I think if you just look at it from this perspective is, you know, center, you don't necessarily need a ton of great skills to be a center. If you can do a rebound well, you can protect the rim well, catch lobs, you're going to be a good center in the NBA. So you feel the safest about Mitchell Robinson. And then you look at the point guard position probably being the hardest to play because you're running the show out there. And we've also probably seen the most from Dennis Smith out of all the guys in this team in terms of playing in the NBA. So I think he probably has the highest bust potential as well. But getting back to the other question, what's your best case scenario for the Knicks? Jack McCord.
Yeah, so before we do, I'm going to go probably Kevin Knox is the highest bust potential just because of what is on the roster right now is going to impede him from showing any growth. But if David Fizdale aligns his priorities in the right way, maybe not. Best case scenario is James Dolan sells the team. I think most New York Knicks fans would think that they'll hopefully we've got Scott Perry and Scott Mills and the MSG ownership group reading OGDBasketball.com. But outside of that, you know, it's the improvement in the chemistry across the board. We see growth from all the players that we've just spoken about. And then I think that you trade away some of the guys that are free agents could become, you know, turn into first round picks or 2 seconds. Or even maybe a young sort of developing player, some cap space. I think if all that aligns, you know, then I think we could see a decent enough season for the New York Knicks and the fans could be happy.
Yeah, best case scenario is they make the playoffs, I think. Everybody takes strides forward. The young guys actually, you know, all flourish at the right time. They keep the right amount of vets. They trade off some vets. And then the veteran core led by the young guys is pushing to the playoffs as like an 8 seed.
Yeah, I got best case scenario, 35 wins. You know, maybe you get a couple assets, but really the real progress is the young talent. But what is your actual prediction for this team next season?
At least 5th in the Atlantic Division. I don't see them necessarily having a transformative season next season. I think it's just going to be year 2 of a rebuild. So hopefully we see the gains from Knox, the younger players like we mentioned before. But I don't have these outreal expectations in terms of wins and losses. The division is pretty stacked. Even Toronto, with them losing Kawhi Leonard, that's a pretty stacked team. Pascal Siakam looks like he's going to step into a role and keep the train running. So unfortunately, as much as I like to say I'm cautiously optimistic, it looks like 5th place. At least in the Atlantic.
Yeah, they're finishing last. And I think win-loss total, I'm maybe somewhat higher than some other people. But like sort of Corey alluded to and we've sort of talked about, it depends on what happens at that sort of February trade deadline and what happens to those veterans on their short-term deals. But I think they could win anywhere upwards of 28, 30 games. You know, I think the playoffs are a little bit unrealistic unless, you know, something were to happen and RJ Barrett were to be a Rookie of the Year contender. Mitchell Robinson continues his growth and Dennis Smith Jr. actually becomes, you know, an NBA-level star and finds a three-point shot and some basketball IQ outside of his, you know, athleticism. But, you know, I think mid-30s is the best case in terms of wins. But my actual prediction, I think they're going to win about 25, 26, 27 games.
Yeah, my prediction is 27 games they win. I think this is a team that's outside the playoffs, of course. I think there is some development, but again, it's rebuilding time in New York.
Yeah, I got 27 wins as well and 5th in the Atlantic. And I don't think it's necessarily the worst that they're last in the division because the Atlantic is a tough division too. But the best case and part of the best case of this actual prediction will be that they can trade some of these guys away and get maybe a couple second round picks moving into next year or at least building up their trade assets when they become a competitive team and looking to be a playoff team / contender. League pass, where do the Knicks rate 1 through 10?
I was torn, so I'm going to say 5. being able to watch them last year, Mitchell Robinson was a revelation. And though it was a ton of losing basketball, being able to watch the young guys fly up and down the court, Alonzo Trier is another one. Really impressed by what the front office has been able to do. Undrafted, two-way from Arizona. He's been able to come in and spark the bench. Dennis Smith Jr. is obviously the high flyer. If Kevin Knox could come in, R.J. Barrett, they have tremendous length for their positions, really athletic. It should be fun basketball to watch. It might be a lot of losing, but at least we'll see some athleticism out there, which is really a departure from how it's been in the Garden for the past couple seasons.
Yeah, I think there'll be some more eyes on them purely because of the R.J. Barrett acquisition and, you know, a lot of these other sort of guys that we've sort of spoken about at length on the pod. But, yeah, I'm going to give them a 5-2.
Well, sorry. Giving them a 3.5. I think there is intriguement in the young guys in Mitchell Robinson, R.J. Barrett, a guy I'm high on, Dennis Smith Jr. I'm intrigued upon, Kevin Knox as well. Also, I mean, I don't need to watch my league pass. I have cable. That's besides the point. But overall, a team that's not going to be playing for anything, a team that's not going to be winning a lot of games, it's going to be rather low on my league pass watch only because I'll be focusing more on teams that are going to be actually competing for a playoff spot. Sorry, Knick fans.
Low-key shade. 4 out of 10 for me. I think there's still some intrigue with the young talent, but, you know, they're not going to be at the top of the list. But what TV show would you compare to the Knicks? And this can be based off of watchability or based off of the plot.
Well, I'm going to go with Growing Pains, which might be a little bit older for some of the people who are listening. But obviously the team is in the middle of a rebuild. And this is what it's going to look like. This is what it's going to feel like. It's going to be inconsistency. It's going to be a lot of losing. There might be some frustration from the players. But then we'll also have those bright spots, too, when you see the young guys emerge, people trying to finally figuring out what their niche is, what their identity is as a team, where they are as players. So I think Growing Pains is apt.
Last one. I'm going with Big Bang Theory for a couple of reasons. One is because it's like everyone just seems to watch the Knicks and like the Knicks despite the fact that it's not that good. They're not that good. And that's the same for me with the Big Bang Theory, in my subjective opinion, despite the fact that, you know, it's lasted a long time. It's very, very popular. That's how it shares a similarity with the Knicks. And also, like, there is some really big combustibility in terms of the name of what could happen in New York as well. Also, you know, the Big Bang Theory is just a show that I'll switch on and watch every now and then if it's on TV. The Knicks are the same, you know, the 5 out of 10 sort of league pass ranking. If they're on, I'm going to watch it. And the same with sort of the Big Bang Theory. There's nothing on TV and, you know, I can't decide what to watch on Netflix, then I'll just go to some network TV and go, all right, I'll just watch an episode of Big Bang and see Sheldon speak about physics for 5 minutes.
So I went with Fear the Walking Dead. So there's a lot of reasons for the show. First off, the sister show of The Walking Dead, the worst show between the two. I get it. Get it. There's two New York teams. One's better. Okay.
Man, I get it. Yep. Funny.
See what you did there.
Appreciate this guy.
Fear the Walking Dead. Obviously, Fear the Walking Dead. The Knicks have been kind of a Walking Dead organization for the last couple of years. The show had a nice little start to it, and there were some young actors who you really didn't know in the beginning of the series. Well, they ended up killing those characters off, and then, you know, the Knicks traded away Porzingis, which could be seen as somebody being killed off. And the show's kind of reached a level where there's some nice stuff you think coming, but it doesn't ever seem to arrive yet at this point. So the Knicks are still in that transitional period where there's some nice stuff in place, but does it actually develop into an actually good story and into a good plot yet to be determined?
That was a well thought out response. I went with Shameless. I went with Shameless here because you watch Shameless because bad things keep happening. It's the same thing with the Knicks. Is like you expect things to get better, but then something else pops up, and that's kind of been the case. Maybe it'll change, but so far that's what they remind me of. But as always, guys, great show. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Victor, Jack, Corey, tell them where they can find you and find your work.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at KWAL Hoops, KWAL Hoops.
I'm at the J-Man JBT, co-host Brooklyn Buzz, co-host JBT. Check out Just Ball Things on Facebook, too.
And you can just catch me on Twitter at VicSab. Always writing, always producing stuff for OTG Basketball.
You can find OTG on Twitter at OTG Basketball. Find the website otgbasketball.com. You can find me on Twitter at OTG_Nick. Big thanks to you guys for hopping on. And as always, thank you everybody for listening. You can find the show on iTunes, Block Talk Radio, otgbasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube.
Peace out, knuckleheads.
Damn, I wanted to say that.